Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. You're listening to part two of our three-part interview series with copywriting legend Ben Settle. The title of part two is called The Deadliest Mistakes You Can Make in Your Email Marketing and How to Avoid Them. Ben says when most people think about running an email campaign with their list, they usually worry too much. They worry they'll send out too many emails and people will get mad and unsubscribe. They worry their emails won't be perfect enough or that they won't sound like an expert. One of the worst mistakes you can make is to let those worries change the way you do your business. Ben once had 200 people unsubscribe from his list after an email promotion, but he made $34,000 on those emails. So ask yourself, what's more important, keeping 200 people happy or making $34,000 in a few days? That's why Ben says if everyone likes you on your email list, you're probably not pushing hard enough with your marketing. Ben calls it playing to win. And in part two, you'll hear how to do it along with the common mistakes to avoid that can cause huge losses. You'll also learn exactly what Ben means when he says your email should be a hot dog that nourishes like broccoli, and real life examples of how to have the perfect combination of infotainment. You'll hear about the email marketing lesson you can learn from the sergeant in Apocalypse Now that will help you understand the kind of leader you'll want to sound like in your emails. You'll hear about open rates. Do they really correspond to sales? Here's the only numbers you really need to keep track of. You'll hear about the worst mistake you can make, sounding like a robot in your marketing, why that's worse than typos or grammar slip-ups, and what you should be doing instead. You'll learn how to turn a snail mail list into email, even if you haven't done anything with them in a long time. You'll hear about the power of adding storytelling to your marketing and just how to do that. You'll learn the recipe that works for email marketing. Let your personality show through like you're doing talk radio. Here's how to do it, along with a sneaky way to develop a personality fast, even if you don't currently have one. You'll learn about perfecting the rant email technique. Take something negative like a bad review, hate mail, or a complaint and turn it into money. You'll hear about the easiest way to keep your emails out of the spam folder. Look, Ben says it's okay to be scared about your email marketing, but you can't let your fears cause you to chicken out and never send out an email. Just make sure you're concentrating on building an audience and connecting with them in a fun, relatable way. If you do that while demonstrating you also know what you're talking about, people will look forward to your emails and they'll buy from you again and again. And in part two of this interview with Ben, you'll hear all about it. Now let's get going. Scott wants to know, Ben, has the massive shift to smartphones from computers substantially changed email format, content, and strategy?
No, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that disagree with me on this, but I do not do anything differently than I did before the smartphone craze. And when I do joint ventures, the sales don't suffer. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people read their emails on their phones. There's no doubt about that. And especially for people obsessed over open rates. They've got to get this through their head. These open rates don't mean a damn thing when it comes to sales. There is a reason to track opens. I would never say don't do it. But people who brag about their open rates like it translates to sales, it doesn't. Because I'll tell you why. For one thing, your phone has to display HTML if it's going to even track an open. My phone, I have an Android phone. And a lot of Androids have the HTML turned off by default because of viruses and that sort of thing. When I open someone's email, it doesn't even register. Now, here's something else that someone recently showed me, my friend Jim Yagi, actually. My friend Jim Yagi is a computer scientist because he actually does scientific experiments. He laughs at all these people who think they're scientifically testing emails. He literally laughs out loud. He's like, these guys don't even know, like, this is what it takes to do a real scientific experiment, which is, like, impossible with email. Just because there's so many changing factors every time. It's never the same. It's always changing. Your list is always changing. Your autoresponder could be on certain blacklists one day and not on the other. Somebody could check their email on their iPhone one day and their iPad the next day, and that screws up. There's all these things that can change. He sent me this interesting news article that they did some studies on the iPhone users, and people who check their emails on their iPhones, like they check their emails on their iPhones, but they mostly buy it from their desktop. to me, it's like, I don't worry about it. I want to get the email out there. I want to make my sales pitch. They're either going to buy it or not. And that's fine. It's like, to me, it doesn't matter. And by the way, with formatting, I have had people debate me on this. And it's okay. You know, it's not against the law for them to be wrong or anything like that. Like, if you look at my emails on a phone, they look like crap.
Are they HTML or are they text?
Mine are just plain text. And it's weird because HTML doesn't always show up the same on everyone's phones either, because sometimes people have the table too wide and they gotta like use their finger to scroll over to the side to read the whole thing, and HTML's not perfect either. So I just throw it out there as plain type, and the sentences look kind of messed up. But it's weird because it's easier to read that way. I had so many people say, Ben, this looks so ugly, but I gotta be honest with you, it's way easier to read than all these other ones I'm getting from people with like perfect HTML. There are ways to do it. Like my friend Jack Bourne, he's a programmer. He's created this tool called AW Pro Tools. It's for AWeber users. And one of the things you can do is you can put your HTML email into this form, and it'll format it so it can be read on all phones, which is cool. If you're going to do HTML, I would say do something like that. But remember, there's this thing Gene Schwartz said in his speech to Phillips, the one that you saw. And he learned this after test, after test, after test, that his ugly layouts always beat the pretty layouts. And he goes, the reason why is because in the world of beauty, the ugly thing stands out. And in this case, at least reading plain text on a phone, even if it looks like the paragraphs are a little, like one sentence is longer than the other, and all that's basically what I mean by it looks messed up and ugly, it's actually way easier to read. It's very easy to read that kind of stuff. I would say, if anything, now full disclosure, I've never like split test this to the point where, oh man, I tested HTML over. By all means, test this if you want. Your results may vary. You know, I admit it. But as far as I'm concerned, it probably helped me, the smartphones and all that, because of that.
John wants to know, do you have the name of an ethical mailing list broker?
There's different brokers that work with different niches. You know, it's interesting. There is this guy, this isn't for direct mail, but it is for email lists. I know this is not the question, but now that it came up, his last name is Murdoch. I can't remember his first name. And he emailed me like a month or two ago, and he was the guy who designed that boardroom ad, whenever to eat on an airplane, you know, which is like 30-year-old ad probably. And he said he has all these really great email lists around. I'm sorry, I don't have his first name, I forgot. But if you look up the last name Murdoch, maybe you'll find him. But for direct mail, I can't tell you because there's so many different factors and it's a swamp. What I would say is there's this one guy, Craig Simpson. He lives in Grants Pass, Oregon, which is like an hour from here. It's amazing I haven't actually hung out with him at least once. He is like one of the top direct mail guys on the planet as far as teaching this especially. And I would say go to SimpsonDirect.com, and I think it's Simpson-Direct.com, but don't quote me on that. You'd be better off asking a guy like him. Or Doberman Dan at DobermanDan.com.
Jen asked, how can a newbie make a mark in the competitive world of email marketing when there are lots of experts such as Ben Settle?
First of all, the word expert to me is the first thing is, don't try to be an expert, try to be a leader. Because people will listen to experts, but they follow leaders. So the question is, how do you become a leader? Well, the way to become a leader in your niche or whatever you're going to do, whatever you want to teach in whatever business you're in my humble but accurate opinion, is to email daily and demonstrate your knowledge and your why they should be following you and build an audience, not just a list like we were talking about earlier in this interview. I'm not saying you have to have a podcast. I'm not saying you have to do anything specific. I'm just saying focus on building an audience and connecting with that audience every day with something interesting, something that's going to be not a waste of their time, something that's actually kind of entertaining and fun for them to consume, because most people are very boring in their communications. Just demonstrate that you know what you're talking about, and by doing that, you will stand out like fart in study hall. I mean, you'll be fine.
What big fears did you have to overcome when it was time for you to start emailing daily? And what advice would you give someone who believes that emailing daily is just too much and that they're going to upset their subscribers?
Well, I know you remember the interview you did with Jim Camp. Yeah, I've listened to that thing so many times. I remember the guy who asked the question, Paul Flood. He asked Jim Camp, he's like, how can I be seen as someone who wants to help and not just like a piranha looking to increase their fees? And Jim Camp goes, well, if you're looking like someone who's just out there just to make money off people, that's not a problem the prospect has. That's a problem you have. That's not their problem. And I would say it applies to this, too. If you think a daily email is too much and you've never even tried it, well, you're projecting what you think onto your market. Okay, people like to read good emails. If you're doing it the right way, you're not imposing on people. People look forward to it. We'll even, like, ask you if it didn't go out. Hey, did you send one today? I didn't see it. There's people looking forward to it. Again, it goes to getting rid of the lukewarm people anyway. Someone on your list who would complain that it's too much, is that really a good prospect? You have to ask yourself, are they at that point where they would really want to buy something to solve whatever problem your product solves? The answer is no. If somebody has a problem or a desire for something, it doesn't matter what it is, and they're ready to buy it, you can't send them enough information. Like, they want to know before they spend their money and all that. They want to be offered stuff. Someone who's overweight and they're sad about it all the time, and they're sick of their doctor saying they're going to have cardiac problems if they don't do something. They're sick of their so-called passive-aggressive friends doing things like tagging their heavy pictures in Facebook, which is something that happens, believe it or not, which is really a mean thing to do to someone who's trying to lose weight. And they're, like, really upset before their next driver's license picture is taken that they don't want to look heavy. Think about someone in that thing. Do you really think you can send them too many interesting, thought-provoking offers that is going to help them? No, they're looking for it. They want a solution. They just want to know that you're the one that's going to help them. They need proof that you're the one that's going to actually help them versus everyone else just lobbing blatant pitches at them all the time, which does come off like they're just trying to get money and all that. They're not trying to help anyone. I would say it's projection. Someone who would say that is simply projecting, or they don't want to do the work to mail daily. Like, I don't blame them either. Like, if the thought of writing a daily email kind of makes you feel weak, and I'm like tired and like, oh man, that's fun. You probably shouldn't do it. You should outsource it to someone else, okay? Because you're just going to be miserable. It's like me trying to do pay-per-click. The thought of doing it, I'd rather outsource it. But don't project what you think on other people, because I'm telling you, real life example, Michael. During that Titans of Direct Response affiliate campaign I did, over 4 days I sent like 17 or 18 emails to my list. Even by yours and my standards, that's a lot.
Were you a little bit worried about it?
Well, I was a tiny bit, just because I had never sent that many before. I usually only sent like 13 during a four-day period. I knew that it was a $2,000 product, and it was not selling internet marketing, which is what most people on my list are looking for. It was more old-school stuff, so it needed more of a sales job. And I just did it. If I had listened to people who were emailing me that weekend, a few people had emailed, Ben, this is too many, blah, 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 you should stop, this is dumb. If I'd listened to them, I can tell you right now that last day especially, when I was sending all the emails, I watched the sales go up about 10 minutes after each email went out. That wouldn't be considered a scientific test by any means, but it's just observation that obviously something was happening after every email, because it was like 5 to 10 minutes after the email went out, I would see like 2 or 3 sales, and the rest of the hour, nothing, until the next email went out. Had I listened to people, instead of just doing what I know is right to do, I would have been out probably several sales. I'll never know how many exactly.
Yeah, if you had chickened out on the last day, you would have probably missed out on at least 50% of your sales.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Oh, yeah, easily. In fact, I know that for a fact. Because I remember tracking the sales. I got more than half on the last day.
Yeah, there's one thing I remember from my interview with Jay Conrad Levinson, and it didn't really make sense until years later. He talked about the commitment to a promotion and the commitment to take that promotion all the way through rather than chickening out. You and I both know that at least 50% of the sales in some cases come from the last 2 or 3 hours of the promotion.
Oh, yeah, it's just the deadline. I mean, people always buy at the last minute, and that's just normal. I mean, most sales do come in right around the deadline. By the way, here's an interesting number for you. All in all, when all was said and done, I sold $34,000 worth of Titans of Direct Response. That was the gross sales. We ended up with, like, 2 refunds. One of those guys was an email player subscriber. He was now banned after that. I'm not going to sell to people who refund things, especially quality stuff like that. If somebody refunds something because it's like a defective product or they got crappy customer service, that's one thing, but there was no reason to. You don't buy something and decide you don't want it. That's not who I want on my list. I make someone a bad person, just not someone I want on my list. But anyway, so we did 34,000 in sales to a list of less than 10,000 people selling a product that's kind of hard to sell to my kind of list. It's all offline people and all that. Very little internet marketing stuff on there. And I believe I had around 200 opt-outs. So let me just weigh the scales there. You know, what's more important, keeping those 200 opt-outs or 34,000 in sales? I mean, somebody's got to really think about that. And this goes back to the mentality. Are you going to play to win or play to not lose? The people who worry about the opt-outs and don't see it through and are scared, there's nothing wrong with being scared about this stuff. It does make you a little nervous. To chicken out when you have a plan and not go through with it because a couple people complain, that's playing to not lose. That's like what the Republicans do in politics, basically. They always play to not lose. They're trying to appease everyone, and they would lose. Democrats are very smart about this stuff. They go after their base, and they don't lose. They win. It's like you can watch this in politics. People who play to not lose, lose, and people who play to win, win. I think in advertising, you got to do the same thing. You got to play to win. And if you're not going to play to win, get out of the game, because otherwise you're just in everyone's way.
For the listeners who are just joining us, can you give the listeners your URL and your website and just instructions on what to do when they get there?
www.bensetzel.com. And when you get there, you have a choice. You can opt in. And if you do, I'll send you the first issue of my email players newsletter as a PDF. It's a print newsletter that usually gets mailed to people. But if you opt in, I'll send you a PDF of the first issue. I have absolutely had people tell me they've made thousands of dollars just in information on that. In fact, I had one girl, she was working for this company that I guess had a pretty nice-sized list and everything. And she goes, Ben, I didn't even buy any of your stuff. I'm just using your free stuff. And I wrote some emails that brought in $50,000 extra dollars in revenue that would normally not have come in from my boss just using your free stuff. So that's kind of what you can expect. If you don't opt in, that's fine. You can just bypass that and go to the blog. And I've got over 1,000 pages of content on there and like well over a dozen hours of audio and video on there. That's all free. You don't have to pay for anything. Trying to demonstrate that I'm worth listening to. If you don't like anything, then don't worry about opting in. It's all good. You can get the free issue and walk away, and it's all good.
Here's a question from Paul Howard at www.iguaranteesales.com. Ben, I just did a marketing analysis for a small local retail sporting goods store. One of the biggest assets I found was that they have an email list of over 15,000 past buyers from over the last 4 years through eBay. They have done no marketing or follow-up and don't even have the list compiled into a database yet. What steps would you take to create and implement an effective email marketing campaign to first introduce a new USP, then to send out regular offers? Also, how often would you keep in contact emailing them? Also, is there an email service provider that you would recommend that would work well for a small retailer looking to move more towards online selling? I'm a big fan. Thanks.
There's several ways you could do this. My first idea, and it's not like you have to do this or that this is even the best way of doing it, is to not email those buyers and snail mail them instead. Snail mail them what's called a reactivation letter. It's not unusual to get like a 30% response to reactivate a past customer. I've seen numbers like that, at least in like the chiropractic world. So maybe it's not that big for retail, but still, send them a snail mail letter making them an offer and then getting back into their consciousness so they know who you are again. If you insist on doing it with email, you're going to have to find a provider that will let you import all of them without making them double opt-in, which, you know, a lot of the ones will do it these days, but that's something to be mindful of. Make sure you segment it and send them an email just saying, hey, you bought XYZ product on XYZ date, and I just want you to know I'm sorry it took me this long to keep in contact with you. I'm going to start sending you daily tips or ideas, whatever it is that's sporting goods. So I would probably send them tips on sporting-related things, how to be better at certain sports, how to pick better equipment, how to maintain equipment, you know, just useful stuff to people who are buying that kind of stuff, and start sending them daily emails like that. And make some kind of offer in every email. The offer is to get them to come into the store, even better. Then you don't even have to ask them to click a link or anything. Hey, come into the store today and show us this email or whatever you want to do, any kind of qualifier, and we'll give you, you know, 10% off today only. We just want to see you come into the store today. We'll give you 50% off something. You want to get them in that store with something irresistible. If you come into the store by tomorrow, certain time, we will give you up to $100 in store credit to spend anything you want. So think of offers. This is less about email and email technique, and it's more about offers. The more offers you can think of, and for retail, you can just come up with different offers all the time. In fact, that's what the retail clothing industry does. They are constantly changing their offers. Like every couple months, it's a new offer. That's what they do. It's a very strategic thing, and you could do the same thing. Just keep rotating offers around. Buy one, get one free of this. Come in and get 10% off that or 20% off that. And just keep thinking of new offers. Get together with your clients and say, okay, what kind of offers can we give these guys to get them to come in here? Because very few people go into a store and just buy one thing. Chances are they get something at a discount, but, you know, I save some money on that. I can spend some money on this instead. I don't know if they're already doing this or not, but let's assume they're not, Michael. They should actually check out your course on how to get into Walmart. If I had a retail store, that course would be perfect because it talks about putting like products next to each other. That's what Walmart looks at least when you're doing that product. That guy was saying that Walmart doesn't look at the product. They look at how your product can help sell the products around it. And that's a whole other strategy. It has nothing to do with email, but it's something to think about.
Ben, for years you've discouraged your followers from using social media. In the last year or so, you've begun using it yourself. Why the change of heart? What have you learned from your foray into this medium? This is from Bob Hingen.
You know, I don't know if I ever really discouraged it. I did make fun of it and mock it a lot for a while. I still call it things like flake book and all that because a lot of what's on there is just garbage. It's a time waste. The times suck. I mean, people actually have to do what they call Facebook fast to unplug from it because they become so obsessed with it. It goes back to that dopamine drip. I do use it, but if it's not blatant, it's more disguised now than it used to be because Facebook's frowning on what I used to do. But what I'm doing is self-promotion. For example, when this interview is up, I'll definitely tell my Facebook friends about it. There's no doubt about it. I have a Facebook fan page now because when I was working with Shane Hunter, he was doing my paid Facebook ad. He's like, well, yeah, you want to get a Facebook page because now you can look. It's so much easier to sell to them once you have a Facebook page. You have all these, like, demographics and psychographics and all this information on them, and it's just another way of getting your audience together. I'm not saying never use it. I just think people should use it wisely. He's right, though. In the past, I have kind of discouraged, I guess, in some ways. Like, I remember doing a post once, and someone's like, don't let Facebook steal your balls. There's a lot of emoting going on. Now, this is for guys. This isn't for girls. Girls like to emote. That's just how they get rid of their stuff. Guys generally don't emote, but there's a lot of girls in there emoting, complaining, and all this stuff. I mean, that's just how they deal with problems. It's not like good or bad or anything. And I see a lot of guys doing the same thing. They're starting to act like it because a lot of guys are on Facebook to just stalk girls, unfortunately. If you want to see an example of this, find any pretty girl that you know that you're friends with on Facebook. Watch the next time she posts something completely irrelevant and irreverent. She'll probably get more guys liking and commenting on it than girls. So I just noticed that a lot of guys start to act like girls. And I still think it applies today, but if you're using it to keep in touch with your market, there's nothing wrong with it. You don't even have to be promoting anything. Just keeping in contact with them, it could be a good tool for that, especially Twitter. I'm probably more of a Twitter guy these days. On Twitter, you can follow a lot of thought leaders and movement builders, but I mean people who are actually trying to create a movement for some kind of cause, and it's very fascinating. I only follow like 95 people on Twitter, and I would say a good dozen or so are people who are part of trying to create a movement or a cause or something, and it's very fascinating to watch that because it's a good education in how to build an audience and how to get your audience, like, become one of your troops or on your side. They're with you. I think it's a good thing to study.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's hardtofindseminars.com. How do you use Twitter?
I don't use it in a way where I would track anything. Most of my time on Twitter is actually not business-related. My blog and my email through AWeber automatically are sent to Twitter because AWeber has this function where you can have your link to your email on AWeber servers just automatically posted under your Twitter thing. So I have that go out, and my blog has the same thing. Other than that, I mostly just read it for entertainment because to me it's like TV for people with really short attention spans. And I just have observed how certain people are leading their movements and industries. Other than that, I don't really use it all that much, other than just those things.
Greetings from sunny Italy. What kind of books do you read or have you read that helped you most with your storytelling? Could you name one or two of them, or the most important ones, of course? And this is a question from Elvis.
I don't think I've ever read a book on storytelling. To me, it's just something you do. I don't know how much you can learn about storytelling other than just reading stories and then telling stories. We're all natural-born storytellers, every single one of us. I guarantee you that you can tell a story, that you've told stories to people in your life, and it's no different than when you're writing copy or emails. I'll tell you something about stories, though. This is how powerful they are. I remember when I was in my last year of college, and I was like a complete C student my whole life. That's through all the grades. K through 12, and community college, and all that. I was always like a straight C student. In fact, I literally graduated 150 out of 300 people. I'm about as C student as you can get. But the very last year of college, I went to this one-hour-long seminar. I paid $30 to go to it on memory training. And I got almost straight A's that year just from doing this and studying for maybe 15 minutes. One of the things they taught you was if you want to memorize a bunch of facts and stuff is to put those facts in the form of a story because your brain is just automatically tuned to picking up information via stories. It wants to hear stories. That's why it's so powerful. People are hardwired to be persuaded by stories. That's why all the ancient religious texts and the Bible, if you read the New Testament, the Gospels are practically all parables. their stories, because that's how you get across everything. In fact, in that book I mentioned earlier, The 7 Lost Secrets of Success by Joe Vitale, he made a good point in that book. He's like, there was a parable where Jesus was talking to his people, and he's like, so this man went down from Jerusalem and fell amongst thieves. And that's like how it started. And Joe Vitale's like, isn't that more interesting to people than saying be a good neighbor? Because that was the point of that parable. Because he told a story that everyone there could identify with. Everyone in those times had either run afoul of thieves on that Jerusalem turnpike, or they knew someone who had. It was very relevant to them. So when he told these things in a story, it has a lot more relevance than just getting the facts. So storytelling is important, but the way to learn it is to just do it. Read ads that are very story-driven. One of the reasons I like Gary Halbert ads so much and to read Gary Halbert ads is because he was really good at this. If anything, I probably learned more about storytelling through emails and copywriting by just reading Gary Halbert ads.
What exactly do you mean by infotainment, and how do you integrate that with storytelling?
Infotainment, it's just like it sounds. You're merging information with entertainment. So you're giving information that would normally probably be dry or just kind of linear, ABC, here's the facts. But you're adding a little entertainment value to it. So storytelling, for example, is natural entertainment. When you say entertainment, it doesn't have to be like slapstick funny. It can be humorous. Humor is really good if you can work it in and it makes sense. But we all like to be entertained because, let's face it, we live in a celebrity-obsessed culture these days. People need to be entertained all the time. They're always glued to their phones and the TV and the movies. Everybody's got a Kindle and an iPad, and they're always watching videos. One of the reasons video is becoming so popular is it lends itself to entertainment. But when I say information meets entertainment, I want to go back to a video that you actually sent me, Michael, many years ago, like 2009-ish, of that guy, Don Hewitt, the guy who founded 60 Minutes. He had died, and they were interviewing his friend, Alan Alda, the guy who played Hawkeye in MASH. And they asked Alan Alda, so why do you think 60 Minutes was so popular? And he goes, it's because they gave you a hot dog, but it nourished you like broccoli. So it was like, it wasn't just hard news. It was probably the first thing of its time. Today, everyone does this. Fox and MSNBC and CNN, they all do the infotainment now. But back then, it was just hard news, and this is what you get on CBS and NBC and ABC. But what they would do is actually put an entertaining twist in everything. It was infotainment. It was basically like a hot dog that nourishes you like broccoli. It looks tasty. It looks wonderful. It looks fun. But it's going to give you that little bit of nourishment. It's not like you just walked away with nothing. And I think emails that do that are very powerful because you don't want to overload people with hard content. People will just get bored of that. They'll appreciate it. They'll tell you how much they love it, but they're not probably going to buy it from you. But if you use infotainment, you take something that's informational, not hard teaching, not here's five ways to lose weight using these super secret techniques. It's more like telling an inspirational story about someone who lost weight when they had all the odds stacked against them. It's like telling a story about someone in the weight loss niche who was humiliated because people were tagging her heavy Facebook pictures. By the way, I've used that example twice during this call because I actually wrote an email about that and it did extremely well. And then later on, since I'm not in that niche anymore, I have some friends who are really high-level affiliates in that niche. I said, hey, go ahead and use that email. And they did, and they're like, oh my God, we did over $1,000 in a day with this. And it's just these little things. It's infotaining. It's not a happy story, but it's infotaining. It's information and it's entertainment by being a voyeur on someone's life and watching what they're doing and how they react. It's just like watching TV. When you tell a story like that, it's like you're watching a television show unfold. So very powerful stuff.
Question from John Imes. Ben, if you could give only one piece of email advice, given your years of email experience, specifically, what would it be and how would it best be implemented?
I would say be personality driven. I really believe this. I've heard this analogy before from other people that email is talk radio. It's your talk radio show. Doesn't mean you have to be political, but you're just going to go out there and be a personality, a unique you. You're not swiping anybody. You're not trying to copy anyone else. You're literally going out there and you're using your personality just the way you would talk and if you were talking in real life to someone. Your slang, your peculiarities, and your way of doing things, of communicating. It's not going to be perfect. It shouldn't be perfect. You're not going to sound like a robot. You're going to sound like a person, a human being that people can bond with and trust. That is the thing that's lacking from so many emails today. In fact, like, yeah, here's another thing. He only asked for one, but here's another thing. This is kind of a subjective thing. I wrote about this in the email players newsletter once. Actually, it's going to come out in a future issue coming up soon. There's this movie called Apocalypse Now. I think most people have seen it. Francis Ford Coppola directed the Vietnam movie. And there's this scene in there with this, I don't know what his rank was, a colonel or something, and it's played by Robert Duvall. His name is Kilgore in the movie. And he's like this guy leading all these people in Vietnam, but he's making them surf during attacks. It's the most bizarre thing in the world. This guy is crazy. He's like, I want you guys to go out there and surf. All this death and carnage is going on. He's all about surfing. And the character Willard is narrating the movie. He's like, you know, this guy's kind of crazy, but people in his unit, they just know they're going to come home okay. Just because of this guy's person. He made them feel like, no matter what's going on out here in Vietnam, my guys are going to come home okay. And I think that's the feeling that I strive for. Everybody's going through their own challenges. Everybody's in a different place in life. You want to be that person, no matter what you're selling. It doesn't have to be business to business or anything. You want to be that person that they just feel like, if I'm reading this person's emails every day, I'm going to be okay. I just know everything's going to turn out okay. I think that's something that's lacking in pretty much everyone's emails, and it's something that you have to work toward. It comes with building trust and a bond with your market. It comes with knowing your market better than anyone else and always studying it. It comes with knowing your product is the best or certainly an excellent product. And all these things come together when you start mailing daily. People really start to feel like, hey, if I follow this Michael guy, I'm going to be okay. I'm in a hell of a jam right now financially or whatever the problem is. They're not going to verbally say this, but that's the feeling you want them to have. They look forward to your emails. You're the cut man in their corner that they just know you're going to be there to help them, and they're going to buy from you eventually because they trust you.
All right, what if someone listening to this says and believes that they have not 1 ounce of personality? Is there still a way that they can create a personality, even if they don't have it, to find their own voice or to create a voice to sell using email?
Well, there are people who lack a sense of humor, like really literal. And I understand that. There are ways to be sort of infotaining and entertaining, even if you're not naturally that way. Telling stories is one way. It doesn't matter if you have a personality or not, if you can tell a story. But another thing I would recommend is there's this book by Dan Kennedy. I think it's Make Them Laugh and Take Their Money or something like that. And it's all about using entertainment when you're selling. And it's really good. And I think it's only like $10 or something on Amazon. It's a great book, and one of the things he says that just stuck out to me is people buy, and they buy in abundance when they're in good humor. So it's a very important skill to have. If you don't naturally have it, you can cultivate it. Another thing you can do and should be doing is pick one or two of the best comedians out there that you like. And I was talking to this guy, Kevin Rogers, who's a copywriter, and he used to be a stand-up comic, and this is some advice he gives to people, which I thought was interesting. Pick a comic. A stand-up comic that you like, and study that person. Watch them on YouTube. Where we have to just study them. Look at how they tell jokes. Another person to watch is Johnny Carson. You can find all kinds of clips of his monologues on YouTube. I'm telling you right now, that guy was an absolute genius at comedy and using social commentary and all these things to make a point. All these things can be applied to your communications and business and in selling. Carson monologues were so well received that 20 million people watched this show every night. He was apparently more well known than the president during his 30 years of doing it every night. And people would just get the whole family together just to watch his 9-minute monologue. They wouldn't even watch the whole show sometimes. They were so good. Watch the show Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld is just a great, brilliant communicator when it comes to comedy and entertainment. Pay attention to the metaphors they use in that show. The stories they tell, how they make things funny, how they take the most ordinary things. They even said it's a show about nothing. That's the joke. And yet it was probably like the most popular sitcom of the 90s. It's not, I don't know about viewership, it's probably certainly one of the most popular that's ever been around. So sitcoms are good. The best talk radio personnel is Rush Limbaugh, Michael Savage, is my guys, Howard Stern. These guys are all great entertainers. And you can learn a lot by observing and then just applying it to your communications.
Here's a question from Carlos. Ben, when it comes to coming up with topics for an email, are there any topics that you personally wouldn't write about to your list? Is there a specific topic that makes you think twice before you hit your finger on the send button?
Not really. You always want to have good taste. You want to know your market and your list. Every list is different. Generally, no. It's interesting. I was talking about that Dan Kennedy book. He used to give 300 talks a year. He's a funny guy, Dan Kennedy. And he's like, there's two topics you can never joke about. And he was, just don't even bother. He was, I don't care what you sell, just don't even bother. One is JFK, and you can't joke about Martin Luther King. You might want to stay away from those topics that someone like him isn't even going in. And believe me, Dan Kennedy has no fear. That guy has no problem skewering everyone in the room and offending everyone in the room. But he said those two topics you just cannot make work if you're going to try to be funny and entertaining and that sort of thing.
How can one use the rant email technique in their favor?
This must be an email player subscriber. I think I've only taught that email players. That's where you're just ranting about something. For example, I once had a copywriting apprentice for a very short period of time before I realized I'm the worst teacher in the world and I have no business doing such things.
How did that copyright apprentice occur? What happened?
Well, she was cleaning my house. She used to be my house cleaner. And then later on, she would cook meals for me, and she had a service cooking meals and delivering to people. And she had a pretty good email list. She was writing emails. I thought, you know, these are actually pretty good. I go, you should get into this copywriting thing. And then one thing turned into another, and suddenly I started being her kind of mentor, I suppose you could say. Which ties into the rant thing, by the way, because one of the emails that she sent out that I thought was good was she was ranting about minute rice. Like how stupid minute rice is and why you should have real rice. So it was like a rant. She ranted, and then she turned it into a reason why you should buy her ready-made meals. And I thought, man, this is actually pretty good. I want to use this as an example in the email player's newsletter. And that's what I meant by a rant thing. Well, you just go on a rant about something. It could be something as insignificant as rice, or it could be something real, like minimum wage for business owners, for example. Like, hey, I'm being forced to pay this person more money than they're worth. That could be a rant. So that's different than when you turn somebody's negative email into a reason to buy it. Now, I'll give you an example of what they're asking about. I have this ebook on Kindle called Blue Chip Email Secret, which is basically, Michael, is that interview you and I did about email where I just took the transcription and turned it into a book. We got a lot of good information in there. Yeah, it's an interview, and some people don't like that format. And this guy gave me a one-star review after saying he liked the information. It's great information. But then just went on this, like, tirade about how crappy the spelling was and how the format was done. But it's just an interview, and it's not even a real book. And it was just stupid, because if you like the information, who cares? So I took his one-star review and reprinted it. And then I basically tore it apart. Just dismantled it point by point because it really didn't make a whole lot of sense what he was complaining about. And the next day I put that into an email with my reply, and then he actually went on Kindle and changed it to a 4-star review. And he said, yeah, you know, I was a little out of line with that. I'm still not liking the format, but you're right. It was really good information. So that's an example of taking someone's hate mail and using it to make sales with, because that just did wonders for my credibility of people who read that. They're like, huh, and they wanted to buy that book then. So it doesn't always go that smoothly where the person changes their mind, but it doesn't matter. First of all, if you're getting hate mail from people or complaint mail, that means you're probably doing something right, and you should keep doing it. And don't let that discourage you, because you're probably turning on the audience you do want while making these lukewarm people mad and turning them cold. That's what you want. So you're doing good. They're handing you fodder. Now, I don't recommend printing somebody's name or smearing someone's reputation or anything like that. Just take the message. You don't have to name them or anything. Sometimes you don't even have to, like, reprint what they said. Just retell what they said. So this guy emailed me and was complaining about XYZ. So you don't even have to reprint what they did. You will find that the people who are on your side, who understand where you're coming from, will become more emboldened and come to your side and root for you, and they're bonding with you more, and you're bonding with them more, and everyone's happy. While the people who don't like you will hate you more, and that's good. You don't really want everyone liking you. You should have a nice, healthy balance of half the people hating you and half the people liking you. If all you're getting is, like, fluffy mail of how much people love you, you're just probably not pushing hard enough, and you should not fear negativity, because you can take that negative energy, like I explained, and use it against them. It's not unlike, Michael, this kung fu I've been learning the last 6 months. It's called Wing Chun, and that's a big principle, that you take that energy that someone's coming at you with, and you use it against them, so you hit them up 10 times harder than you could on your own. And it's the exact same principle I'm talking about with emails, by reusing people's hate mail and turning it into reasons to buy.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
By polarizing your list and you get that hate mail, have you seen any negative effects from the people who hate you?
What happens is you get people who just don't like you, but they stick around anyway, kind of like the Rush Limbaugh syndrome and the Howard Stern syndrome. He's got the same thing. He's got a bunch of people who just keep listening to him because they want to see how much more mad they can get. It's not unlike in the late 1980s when Marvel Comics turned the green Raging Hulk into a smart gray Hulk. And all the green Hulk fans apparently were pissed. And like, oh man, you're never reading this again. But they found that sales are going up. You know, they're getting all this hate mail because people want to see how much more mad they can get. So it's something people have to get used to. I'm not saying it's easy for everyone, but if you're going to do anything significant, people are going to take shots at you.
Do you see if there's negative shit on you on the internet, on any of the message boards, or you don't even bother?
Well, I don't actively look for it, but one thing I do, and I think everybody should do this just to do it, is you can use Google Alerts to put your name or anything you want, really, in there to alert you when that phrase comes up. So every time my name is indexed somewhere in Google, I get an alert about it. So a few times, I've caught some people on the Warrior Forum complaining about me. It's endless fodder. It's almost like they're handing you money, because usually places like that, when people aren't just whining and complaining because they don't like somebody, they're just handing it to you. It's almost like a gift especially the more detailed they are, the more you can, and it's not like you're using it against them, you're just using it for yourself to make more sales. Because they're basically bringing up objections and giving you a chance to give your side of things privately to your list where you have a captive audience. It's awesome. There's none of this back and forth arguing stuff.
What's the reason you use a lot of slang in your emails and you make up interesting words and misspellings? Is there a method to your madness?
Straight out of the Matt Fury email marketing methodology. I learned a lot studying him and his stuff, and he's really the one who mastered that sort of thing, and I give him all the credit because he was big on just making up words for the entertainment value or misspelling a word. But it's like an obvious misspelling. It's not like a typo. He would just purposely misspell words, and it worked out in his favor that the spam filters weren't as bad on him because of that, because he would like change the word money, M-O-N-E-Y, to like M-U-N-N-Y, which is obvious misspelling. It didn't look like an incompetent typo. There's an entertainment value to it. It's powerful. But here's what people got to understand. You don't want to go copying what other people are doing. There are people on my list, and I know they do this because I see it, and their friends will even tell me, so-and-so is using all your slang and all the words you use, and they don't realize how they look like wannabes doing that. I mean, I didn't trademark any of these words, but I know I was the first one to misspell guru, G-O-O-R-O-O, and now everybody is using it like they all invented it, but they all just sound like wannabe neeks. So it's something to be careful. In email, you've got to be your own thing. It's not unlike the jazz world. There's this book that Ken McCarthy put together called The System Club Letters, which System Club is his like $100 a month membership site, and I guess he writes a letter to them every week, like a 500-word letter, and he compiled a bunch of them together. It's probably my all-time favorite business book. It's so good. But one of the early chapters is about the similarities between the jazz world and the business world. He's like, in jazz, copycats don't last. In fact, they do not exist in jazz, because if you don't have something new and unique to bring to the table, nobody's going to pay attention to you. He goes, in business, we have the same thing. And you might last a little longer than you will in the jazz world, but eventually you're going to be knocked out of it because people want a new take on things. They don't want a warmed-over version of somebody else. They want a unique you. Like, most people who go around swiping and copying emails, I guarantee you they don't sit there and talk to their family and friends pretending to be someone else. They're probably themselves. They're really shooting themselves in the foot by swiping and copying other people. It should be an original and work hard and not try to take shortcuts because they're just hurting themselves.
Is there a place for swipe files for an email copywriter? And do you use swipe files to come up with some of your ideas for either sales letters or email copy?
I don't. I have a huge swipe file. I recommend your site, Hard to Find Ads, to everybody, which I think is such an under-known site because people really could use that kind of information. In the beginning, I would read ads and copy ads out by hand all the time, every day. That was my main thing until I started actually getting clients. So I'm not anti-swipe file. But for emails, I think you can study other emails. You can see how people approach their emails. Hey, how'd that person tell that story? How did they structure that email? Look at how they made that concise and tight. Look how they made that entertaining, something so boring. You can study and get inspiration from these things, but I'm totally against word-for-word, whole-cloth paragraphs and stuff swiping because it just doesn't sound authentic. Forget the ethical side of things. There's that, obviously. If you ever saw the movie Transformers, there's that robot Bumblebee, the yellow car, right? He can't talk. The way he speaks, it's like he uses radio transmissions from various songs and news reports and clips to talk. That's kind of what an email swipe together sounds like. It's like all these different voices in one email. And it sounds clunky, it sounds very clumsy, it doesn't sound right, and people just know it. They may not be able to verbalize why they can't stand reading it or why it bores them, but they know. As opposed to an authentic voice, someone who's an original them, they're giving their opinion, they're giving what they want to say, and it's coming from the heart, and it's coming from their own way of speaking, that's going to stand out, I guarantee it.
All right, for the guests who are joining us now, can you give out your main website URL and tell the listener what to do when they get there?
www.bensetzel.com, and you'll have a choice when you get there. You can either opt in, which I recommend. In my biased opinion, you should opt in. If you don't opt in, that's fine. You can still go to the main site. But if you do opt in, I will send you the first issue via PDF, not the print version. It's a print newsletter of my email player's newsletter. I mean, I'm telling you, even today, people go, oh, man, I made all this money just applying the stuff in that first issue that you gave me free. Thank you. And a lot of those people become subscribers as a result. You get that free just for opting in. If you don't opt in, that's fine, too. You can go to the blog. There's over 1,000 pages of content on there, and there's well over 12 hours of audio and video content on there, too. touching upon various different aspects of email and selling, everything from like, okay, here's how you can use emails to get clients. Here's how you can use emails to be entertaining. I try to keep them different. They're not all the same interview going through. I try to keep them nice and diverse. And that's all free. I'm big on demonstrating. So if after all that you think I'm not worth listening to, no big deal.
Here's a question from Rich French, and he's from Chicago. Ben, one of the hot topics in the guru space today is marketing automation in terms of building complicated structures to send emails based on your prospect's behavior. I love the simplicity of Ben's daily emails and would be interested to hear about what he thinks of these latest tactics.
I think if they work, you should do it. I keep as simple a funnel as I possibly can for my main thing. But that said, that's because I don't want to have to hire things out and outsource things and write a bunch of autoresponders. I just don't want to do it. I got better things to do with my time, and I have a nice little thing going now. But that said, there is a lot to be said for segmenting customers and people and having them tagged because, for example, there's software out there where you can tag someone where they may not be segmented necessarily, but you can tag them so that they receive certain information if you want to send it out. I think that if you're into that and you want to do it, do it, because there's a lot of power in segmenting when it comes to people's interests and that sort of thing. And that is definitely something we're going to be doing in this golf company I have a partnership in. We're going to be getting into all that because that's a market where you can just slice and dice a list up in a million different ways, and it's all good. So I'm all for it. I just don't do it. It's just like I'm all for paid per click, but I don't personally do it. I just don't want to for my main site. I just don't feel like spending the time on it. But if you're into it, if you have the software to do it, if you have the time and patience to do it, or if you have a team in place to do it, I'm all for it. I think it's a great thing.
What are some of the no-nos in one's subject line and body copy that can get email banned or ranked as spam? What are some of the best practices that can keep one out of the spam filters?
Stop doing what spammers do. So, for example, there are people who do this who I have the utmost respect for, except when they do this. I just shake my head when I see some of these things. Where they'll put the letters R-E with a colon, like they're replying to something, just to get someone's attention so it looks like they're replying. I'm not saying it doesn't work on the weak-minded, no, that I'm sure it does, but it's so shady. And I believe, and I'm not a lawyer, so I can't say this is the law, I'm pretty sure that violates the Canned Spam Act, and I don't think AWeber lets you do that for that very reason. Same with people who put forward, like they're being forwarded something. Or people who put at the end of an email, sent from iPhone. It's a list email from an iPhone. I'm not saying it won't work. For all I know, it might jack your response up. I don't know. But in the long run, really, to the people who think and the people who are skeptic, which is a much bigger section of a lot of niches than people realize, you've just turned off a light switch, and that's not coming back on easily, a light switch of trust. So I would say stop doing those things. Read your spam. If you're using Gmail, it's really easy. Just look at your spam folder. Look at the things spammers are doing that are getting them there. For example, one popular subject line going around is from and then a person's name. Now, I don't know why someone would put that as a subject line anyway, but don't do it, because it's obviously ending up in the spam folder. So look at your spam folder, look at all the subject lines, and don't do what they're doing. Now, there are caveats to this. If you end up opening a piece of spam because it got you to open it, you want to look at what they did to get you to open it. I'm not saying you got to copy it or anything like that, but they did something right. That's the only way a spammer can survive. In a lot of ways, they're the ones leading the edge in how to get emails open. But avoid the things that are getting sent to your spam folder. That's why they're in the spam folder. So,
what kind of autoresponder do you use? Can you recommend any one company over another?
I can't, and I'll tell you why. Because all of these companies are prone to going dark side. You know, they're all prone to doing things that I don't like. And I don't want to recommend one, and then suddenly they make some dumb change, or maybe they bring in too many of the wrong people, and suddenly all their customers' emails aren't getting delivered because they're put on a spam list, because that could happen. I can't recommend one of them. What I can recommend is go to the big ones, the reputable ones, like AWeber and GetResponse and Constant Contact, MailChimp, all the ones that are reputable. They've been around. They have relationships with spam blacklist companies, so they're on your side with that. They all offer, like, a trial. I think they all do. I'd be surprised if they don't. Most of them, at least, I know, offer a $1 trial or a $3 trial or something. And use whichever one's interface you like the most. So, for example, I've been using AWeber since 2003. Right now, at this time, I like them. That could change. So, for example, I like the company, but I don't like some of the changes they do. In fact, every time they make a change, I cringe. And I'm not the only one. There are a lot of heavy emailers that use it. They're like, oh, God, I hope they didn't do something to make this more complicated. But luckily, in their case, they still let those of us who have had AWeber since, you know, 10 years ago, grandfathered in where we can still use the old interface, the new interface takes more steps to send an email than the old one did. I don't know why they do that, other than maybe it's more simple for a newer person to follow one screen at a time, like, you know, just to walk them through it, baby steps maybe, which is fine. Google does the same thing. If you log into Gmail nowadays, you can type in your username and your password. All they let you do is put your username, and then once you put that in, the password field will show up. I can see why this appeals to brand new people who don't know anything about anything, but it's more steps. I want less steps, so that's why I'm not going to endorse any one of them, even the ones I'm using. I also use one shopping cart. Maybe one day I won't. I don't know. I can't tell you. They do the same thing where they've kind of made it so I can't send plain text emails, which bothers me. It's not enough to not use them anymore because I don't do a lot of emails from there. It's just my customer list is on there, and I do most of my customer selling through direct mail. But that's what I'm saying. Even if I'm using them, I'm not going to like whole cloth endorse anyone because they could change at any time. But you got to use the ones where the interface makes the most sense for you because you shouldn't be spending a lot of time on emails, I don't think at least. There are some people who will spend days on an email and tracking every nook and cranny. I'm a big money's attracted to speed kind of guy. The faster I can write it, get it in there, and get it out, the faster I'm going to make money. So that's kind of the way I look at those things. But either way, take the trials, look at the ones that interface that makes the most sense, and go with that.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
Here's a question from Tony Polisi. What do you see as one of the biggest mistakes people are making when it comes to the length and style of copy in our attention deficit social media obsessed world?
You know, nothing's really changed. I would give the following advice 15 years earlier, even when there wasn't that much competition. Pithiness rules. I didn't make this thing up. I just applied it to email. You want your emails to be like a woman's skirt. Short enough to get attention and long enough to cover the details. As long as you're not boring and you're not long-winded, you should be okay. So many emails are just long-winded and they're boring because nobody wants to hear the information, and that's a disconnect with someone's market. It's not even the length of the emails. You could probably get away with writing a long, rambling email as long as it's fascinating information to the market. But most people, even if they write concise emails, the people are struggling. The reason they're struggling is because there's a market disconnect. They're not connecting with their market. They don't know their market. They don't study their market. All they study is their product. And you got to study your product, but the market comes first. In fact, I brought up the Wing Chun Kung Fu earlier. When you start learning that, and I'm sure it's like this with a lot of other arts too, but the first thing they teach you is what they call the form. There's a Chinese term for it, but I just call it the form, where you get in a stance and your body is in complete harmony with nature. Everything you do is connected with gravity. You're using all of gravity to strike. You're balanced by gravity. It's harder to move you. You're just in a position of power. No matter how big or strong you are, it doesn't matter, or how weak you are. It's a very powerful position to be in. And you start going through this series of movements in this form with your hands and your arms and your wrists and your elbows. And that form basically encompasses all of the moves you're ever going to use in this art. It's just done in a specific way, and you just practice it every day. Well, the guy who's teaching me, we call him Sifu. That just means teacher. The Sifu teaching me this, he's like, look, whenever you get stuck in this, when you're trying to practice something or learn it, like when I'm practicing at home on my training dummy, just remember this. The answer to what you're looking for is always in the form. Just go back to the form. You will find the answer there because all the movements are in that form. And it's the same in marketing. If you run into a problem or if you think your stuff's too long-winded or if you're not saying the right stuff and you're not getting attention, go back to your market. All the answers are in the market. This goes for any kind of writing copy. It's in the product too, but mostly it's in the market. You know, I can actually write emails now where I don't even see the product and I can sell the product. And I did this recently. As you know, I've been selling this prostate ebook. People have prostate problems. I teamed up with this guy, Eric McMillan. He kind of runs the traffic to it. We use my emails. We haven't done much with it because neither of us wants to create content. We don't really want to screw around with supplements and other FTC rules. We just kind of let it to the side. We're both focusing on this golf thing. It just kind of pays for itself right now. Eventually we'll get to it. But recently, like last month, he was on ClickBank. He's like, you know, let's sell something to these buyers. So he went on ClickBank and he found that there's certainly one of the highest selling informational products for people with erectile dysfunction. Now, Michael, I can honestly say I've never had erectile dysfunction. I don't know the pains of that market. I'm not in that market. I can't even imagine that market other than what any other guy could imagine. I didn't even have the patience to sit through the sales pitch because it's like a video sales letter, and I can't stand watching video sales letters. He's like, hey, can we sell this? And I said, well, I didn't get the product, so I never saw the product, and I didn't even see the sales pitch. But I wrote an email in about 5 minutes, with about 5 minutes of research and then 5 minutes to write it. Last I heard, we were doing like $2 and some cent earnings per click, which for our size list and the cost of the product was actually really good, he was telling me. I just knew how to study that market very quickly by using Google. And I found out a few of their pains. I told a story around it. And then in the bottom of that email, I admit I came full disclosure. I said, look, I've never used this product. I don't have this problem. And I can't make you any guarantees. But I hear it's helped a lot of people, and you should give it a shot. I mean, that was the email. It was a story and then a full disclosure. I've never even used it. And we got a lot of sales. In fact, I really need to get off my butt and write more emails for that product. Once you know the market, even just a little bit about a market, as long as you know their hot buttons and what pains them, what plagues them every night, email becomes a very powerful weapon for selling. It's all about the market.
That's the end of part two. Please continue to part three.